Speaking.
Hello, Nikki Moffat, it's Kirsty.
Hello, Kirsty Rice, how are you?
I'm husbandless. I've got full control of the telly, my laptop in the bed with me, as well as my 11-year-old. But we've been eating leftovers for days. How about you? How's your week going?
Well, it's sunny here, so there's really not much I need to say beyond that. It's freezing, but sunny, so all good here.
It wouldn't be a normal telephone call if we didn't talk about the weather. So, Nikki, you own a house in the US, right? And I've owned a house in North America in the past, and I've just built a house in Australia. And we both pay exorbitant amounts of rent to the expats. So I reckon we should have an expat conversation about this.
Yeah, I reckon building, buying, renovating, we should definitely talk about it because we talk about the options all the time.
Okay, want to make a podcast about it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Hello, I'm Kirsty Rice, an Aussie expat based in Qatar, and welcome back to our new and improved Two Fat Expats podcast, where we talk all things expat, screwing up our expat children, finding the best expat locations to live, and not blowing our expat dough. How are you, Nikki Moffat?
I'm fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice. Today we're going to kick off with our geographically challenged section, and we're going to talk about building, buying, or renovating as an expat.
Yes. Now, building, buying, renovating always has its extra challenges. I reckon this episode's going to end up being split into two because we've got a lot of different people to talk to and there's a lot of different scenarios. So building could be something like what I've just done where I have built in my home, my passport country while I've been living in my expat country, or it could be something like my friend Kelly who's building a house in Thailand while she lives in Abu Dhabi but she's actually Australian. We've also got people who are thinking about buying houses as expats, like Nikki, you and I both did. You bought a house in Atlanta, I bought a house in Canada and a house in Houston when we knew we weren't going to live in those places forever. But we're also talking about renovating, and you, Nikki, I think have spoken to someone really interesting this week who's done a major renovation in a country that isn't her home.
Absolutely. So where this came from, this whole topic came from Kathy. So Kathy used the magic microphone on the www.twofatexpats.com webpage, and she sent us a message. So let's listen to Kathy's message.
Hi, ladies. It's Kathy in Paris. Not too much to say, although a topic I thought could be interesting, relevant to me. We were living in Hong Kong and have done South Korea and some time in Brisbane as well. I'm Australian, married to my French husband, and we just moved back to France last July. We're about to do, we've just bought a house and we're about to renovate. And I guess it's a bit daunting after living away and in rentals for so long, actually having the thought of being able to do something with the house is exciting. But also living in a country where you really don't know much about it seems a bit challenging. So I'd love to hear of any do's or don'ts as advice from others that may have done the same thing. Thanks.
Okay. Kathy said two things that I think I've always wanted to say. One was, I'm Australian, my husband's French.
The other one, we just bought a house in Paris.
How did you know? But Kathy, we have tracked down and got the best person, I think, for you to speak to. So Nikki, you did this interview, but it's with Danielle, and I have met Danielle before. She is a great friend of my sister-in-law's and I love her. We've sort of stayed in contact after I met her years ago and then sort of re-met again at my sister-in-law's wedding. I wanted to hear all about your chat with Danielle. How was it?
It was amazing. So Danielle and her husband, which you know this background, sold all their possessions in Australia and moved to France to start a B&B. They were from corporate Australia. They'd both worked in corporate jobs and they'd never run a B&B before. They'd never run a business together or worked together before. So while this story started out as understanding what it's like to buy and renovate in another country, as with everything, Danielle's story is so much more than that.
Now, Nikki, from memory, I think Danielle and her husband did that thing that so many of us have done on holidays, except they followed through. They saw the place. They were driving through France, saw the place and went, that's it, that looks good. Let's find out about buying that one, like from seeing the for sale sign. Is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And it was just an amazing story because they went to look in a whole different part of France and they had lined up all these places to see in advance, and then when they got there, none of the places, they didn't like any of the places. So they thought, oh, well, we're here, we'll just have a holiday anyway. So they drove to a totally different area of France and then that happened.
And I think too they were self-taught with French, and like they didn't have a lot of French. They'd just gone to basic French classes before they sort of went off. But anyway, I want to hear the interview. Let's have a listen.
Our house was, it's a manoir, which is not a chateau. It's kind of, you know, more than a house, but less than a chateau. So it's a manoir. It's a country house. It's a French country house. And it was a second home for a wealthy Parisian family. And the French don't use holiday houses as weekenders. They more use them as one big holiday in summer. So Bastille Day on the, you know, it's their national holiday on the 14th of July. Every big, you know, house in France, the chateaus, all the shutters fly open and the families arrive and there's cars everywhere and kids everywhere. And then, you know, last week of August, before school starts back the first week of September, it all shuts up and everybody motors back up the highway to Paris. So our house wasn't in bad condition. It wasn't a wreck, but it certainly needed all the bathrooms for the en suites, and it needed redecoration and, you know, electrics and Wi-Fi, because God forbid anybody should go on holiday and not have Wi-Fi for, you know, 20 seconds. Yeah, and then you have to go about finding the right artisans for the work that you want done. And we contacted a few English builders that were here just on the basis that, you know, well, at least that language barrier is, you know, not an issue. But we found that they're not registered here and they don't come with the security and the insurances that you need to have to get the work done here. We needed professional artisans that you sign a contract with, what they call a devi, and, you know, you pay an amount up front. Everything is in that devi. The devi is a really important thing here. You know, the materials to be used, the cost, the time frames, everything, and that then forms your guarantee of their work for the next 10 years. So, and, you know, if you ever want to be able to sell your house, then you need to have all of those guarantees in place for the work that's been done to say that they're insured. So if anything goes wrong.
So what kind of time frame did you give yourself when you got there to do this?
Well, we gave ourselves 2 months and it took 18 months. So, because in Australia you sign up a builder and they want to get paid, and the way to get paid is that they do the work, you know, so the dollar really works. But here, no. We had 6 artisans all around the dining table on the same hymn sheet, of the plumber, the electrician, the tiler, the builder, the stonemason, and we signed all of the contracts together, and we gave each of them a check for 30% of their work that was being done. And that was the last we saw of them for 3 months, because it was right before summer.
So they were heading off to their manoirs.
Yeah, well, literally they were. So we saw them all at the best restaurant in town that night. We went down to the waterfront restaurant to celebrate signing up the builders, and there's all the builders.
They were celebrating too. They had their summer, they had their holiday money.
Exactly. And of course, our language skills weren't great, and we didn't understand that they too would pack up with everybody else. We thought the summer was a great time to be doing building work. There's no rain, there's no cold, there's no snow, but no. So, and it was just like a 3-month-long really bad date. Should we call again? Is he ever coming back? I don't know. Do we do something wrong?
So 18 months, and then what happens on the last day? Do you have another party and take them to the fancy restaurant for dinner?
You know, they were probably, you know, in New York by then. No, they were fun. But I suppose that it all kind of, in the end, it all kind of trails off, I must admit. You know, like one of them will finish earlier than the others, and they just kind of, you know, you hand over your final checks and they all go their other ways. And we've used them all, you know, ever since. You know, you're never quite finished in an old house with a renovation. So there's always, you know, more bits to be done. So they come backwards and forwards. But when we were finished, you know, what we wanted to do was to obviously get open and start earning an income. So in the end, you know, we had a bit of a deadline to work to that we had our first guests arriving. So
had you done it before? Had you built in Australia or renovated in Australia?
Yeah, we had. Both of us, before we were even married, I mean, we'd been married 10 years before we embarked on something like this. So, and we had both separately been really keen amateur renovators before we got together. And then we'd done a couple of houses together in Melbourne. Yeah, so it's something that we've always loved doing.
So what was the difference between doing it in Melbourne and doing it in the south of France?
Well, it was the language barrier, obviously. And number two would have been the lack of commerciality here in that, you know, as I said before, in Australia, the dollar talks and you're, you know, whatever you want, you just pay for it. You know, you either shop around or you pay the money, you know, and that's that. But here, it's more about time and relationships as much as anything. And then I think also the other thing was when we arrived here 4 years ago, there wasn't a lot online. So Australia is so far ahead of the world in online shopping and, you know, seeing the world as an entire marketplace. It, not even the biggest department stores here at that time had an online shopping presence. So finding the stuff that we wanted and needed was really, really difficult and actually ended up in a few trips to the UK in the end to buy things because it was just too hard to find what we wanted here.
To go and buy your French provincial range of products.
Yeah, that's the irony of it. And the French aren't into doing things. They call our style, which we just call French country, they call that retro.
And what would you do differently next time, do you think?
We would always chat about this. We would have and we should have improved our language skills before we got here. It's the one thing that we're in control of that just so would make all the difference with everything in life here. So just that that ability to integrate a bit better and to it's a politeness thing as well, you know, coming to a country and then, you know, not being able to communicate with them is a really difficult thing. So definitely the language thing.
And what about tips for others? Someone just came to you and said, oh, my God, I can't believe you've already done this. This is exactly what we want to do. We've just bought in the village down the road. What's your best tip?
Get your little spreadsheet happening. We had a master spreadsheet in Excel that we put every single thing that we thought that we needed and what the cost would be into it. And it was everything from the major building works down to teaspoons and towels and, you know, and just to literally to make sure that we had enough money to be able to set up here the way that we wanted to and to be able to live. And, you know, that was our little Bible for months. Do we have everything? Is it on here? You know, it kind of saved us.
Wow. That is so huge. Like, isn't it fantastic that even the French managed to change the word tradesman to artisan and it sounds so much better already? But such a good point on the language, you know. Like, the sooner they invent the language chip that we all put in our ear so that we can suddenly speak the right language, the better, I reckon.
It's so frustrating. I've had more internet problems this week, and I just cringe when the internet goes down, because the language. And she said one of her tips was to learn the language more. But a lot of people in our position don't know over a year in advance before you're going to move to a new country to learn a new language. So yes, I agree. But the place that they run as a B&B, I'm going to put the link obviously in the show notes, but it is amazing, and it has lots of social media accounts, Facebook, Instagram, etc. So I think yesterday I interviewed her, it was their 4-year anniversary of buying the place, and it had just snowed, and so it's these beautiful photos of the manoir in the snow.
So Nikki, you bought a house in another country. Is there any tips that you could tell people? Now, I know you bought in America, so it was a little bit easier language-wise, but do you think, is there anything you wouldn't do again?
Look, honestly, I don't know if I'd buy a house again.
Yeah.
I just really think now that we have it, and that's fine, it's an asset, and it, you know, we've rented it and everything's fine, but we didn't know how long we were going to be there. We didn't know why we bought it was the reason a lot of people buy, is that you're spending money on rent, and the rent can sometimes be more than it would cost to have a mortgage in the same location. So people decide, okay, well, let's build an asset while we're here, which is what we did. I didn't know enough about the type of houses in the US, in the area that we were buying. I didn't know about the different materials. I didn't understand about the maintenance. I didn't understand about, you know, the ongoing costs. There's so many different things that when you're already in a country, you have a better, you know, and you've grown up there and owned property there before, you have a better understanding of. So that would be my tips. I wouldn't say don't buy. I just say, you know, try and find people like yourself who aren't from there, and ask them what their biggest, the things they didn't know were, and what were they would do differently.
Yeah, we bought a house in Canada and we bought a house in Houston. Now, I just want to quickly apologize. If people think I'm torturing small children, I'm not. There's children outside playing. And if you're wondering what that ooh is, that's the beagle who can hear them, and she's letting them know that she can hear them. She'd like to join in. So just excuse that. I'm sorry to distract everyone. But back to the housing. Yes, I think one of the interesting things about buying a house in another country is, this sounds ridiculous, but houses look so different. So you and I know, Nikki, like if you live in Queensland, you would buy an old Queenslander. And even though I've never bought a house in Queensland, I know about the maintenance of what a Queenslander, which is like the sort of shutters, the beautiful houses that are up on stilts, look like. And I know from my hometown and living in the city that I lived in, that a 70s house is either red brick or cream brick, you know, that an 80s house sort of looks a bit McMansion, you know, that a 19th house has a different facade on it. And I think what is so strange when you move to a different country, particularly another Western country, is you don't have that background idea of what that house represents. So when we moved to North America, I can remember I just didn't understand why a lot of people would have bricks on the front facade and then it would all be render on the sides. And that to me looked fake and awful. Whereas, and once I'd lived there for 5 years, I realized that it was a particular style of home of a particular vintage in a particular suburb. You know, it had a story behind it and it meant something. And, you know, those popcorn ceilings that you would see to me looked really cheap, but to, you know, a North American home sort of represented a different vintage as well. So I think you can be a bit screwy on your ideals. And I can remember, Nikki, you had a story too, that there is something with your house in America that you learnt later, oh, these ones aren't as popular, do you know, as those ones. And I can't remember what it was. It was something about the rendering or something
like that. Yeah, it's the type of walls used. That's correct. That's exactly right.
Yeah. And so I think there's that. I think what happened to us in Canada was we moved to Canada in about 2004. Early 2004. Very early 2004, and we went into a rented house that my husband had picked
on his own because we had three children under the age of four at the time, and he flew across first. And he picked this house that it was pink, except they called it salmon, and it was salmon everywhere, inside and out. It had pink tiles, pink walls, pink bathrooms. It was pink rendering. It was awful. It had pink carpet. Anyway, I could get over all of that because we were renting and it was fine and it was within our budget. That was all fine. But then we found out we were living next door to a crack house. And I had a husband who travelled 70% of the time. So he was just gone. So we literally moved into this house. We had no furniture. My husband went off to China and then the police raided the house next door. It was just a nightmare. We ended up buying because...
in the same suburb?
Yeah, in a, around the corner, and I got a real feel for it, and we bought a house that we could see you could do, you know, it was like kind of the worst house on the best street, that sort of scenario, and it had had the same people living in it for a long, 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 long time. So it looked a little bit tired, and it looked like it could, if you just sort of stripped it, repainted, cleared it up, you know, you could see where you could make it look so much better. And so we were very, very lucky. We thought we'd missed the boom. We ended up, we hadn't. So we made quite a profit on it and we sold it, you know, in a weekend. So we, it was a good story. But I mean, for all those good stories, there's plenty of bad stories, right? We just got lucky in that time. When it came to moving to Houston, most people know that the Houston market is really kind of flat because they have a huge transient nature and it sort of doesn't really move. And so we tried to do the same sort of thing. We bought a house where we just sort of stripped it bare, you know, peeled off all the wallpaper and the ickies and did a very sort of cheap, quick reno, and we got out of it a year later sort of on par. Do you know, we didn't lose any and we were okay, but we didn't make any.
The other thing that I didn't know about American real estate, and I don't know whether this is the same in Houston, but you could renovate your house and spend as much money as you like on it and make it look amazing. And if the other houses in your neighborhood don't look like that, it doesn't matter. You still can't charge more for your house. Because the all the valuations, and I think this is a little bit of a fallout from the housing bubble crisis in the US. Or the bank only values your house based on the value of other houses sold in your neighborhood or immediate area. So there is such a thing as overcapitalizing on your house because you cannot get the money back if you put too much money in. It's crazy. Whereas in Australia, you could be next door to someone and their house can sell for a million more than your house because they've spent the money on it. But in the US, that's just not a thing.
Yeah. And I mean, if we have people in America that are throwing their arms in the air at the moment saying that is not true, please do send us a message. But the other thing I think that is really important when you're buying and selling in the States is look at your suburb and look at the average time on market. So we chose a suburb that was perhaps a little bit more run-of-the-mill average because we knew that average days on market to sell was something like, you know, 45 days or whatever. There was another suburb next door where the houses were probably 100,000 more and the average time on market was 80 days to sell. So we kind of put that in mind of, okay, if you go up into that next bracket, you're adding maybe another couple of months onto your sale time. And that is a problem if you're an expat. So that would be a piece of advice as well, is to look at a suburb that has a high turnover of buy and sell so that you can get out of there quickly. Don't spend too much money because it is really hard not to get caught up in it. In both the houses that we have lived in overseas, they have not necessarily been what we would have chosen at home because we didn't want to spend as much money and we knew we had to get in and get out, you know, faster. So, yeah, I would keep that in mind. I also think, though, there is something wonderful about having your own home. There is something gorgeous about entering a neighborhood and being able to be part of that neighborhood and feel like you're you're on the same sort of grounding as everyone else. It is your house, because, you know, when it's not your house, you just don't spend money to change the colour of that wall that's driving you bananas, you know, because you can't. It's not your wall to paint. So, and you don't want to waste any money, whereas you don't feel that way when it's your own house. So that would be my advice.
Yeah, and I think it depends on where you live. So a lot of people live in locations just like Houston, Calgary and Atlanta, where there's not loads and loads of expats around. So everyone does own their own house. So in our neighborhood, people would say, oh, you know, they're the renters. I'd say, oh, who's that? Oh, they're the renters. I was like, oh, thank goodness we're not renting. I try but in other places, it's no one buys and everyone rents because of different reasons. So I agree with what you're saying, but I think it's also location dependent. Anyway, all the best of luck to Kathy and her renovation. And we hope she keeps us across how it's going.
Yeah. So that's renovating and buying. And maybe next week, Nikki, we do building in your home country and also buying in a building or buying in one of those lovely holiday destinations, you know, like Thailand or Bali or somewhere like that, where we all think about doing that. So perhaps we talk about that next week as well.
Yeah, perfect.
Expat tech. So, Nikki, lots of feedback from the Google Doc of Doom that I talked about last week.
We did have a lot of feedback. And, in fact, we even had a message, Kirsty. Victoria from New York sent us a message in response to that segment on the podcast. So let's listen.
Hi, Kirsty and Nikki. This is Victoria calling from New York. I'm just listening to your episode about managing travel and family calendars. I wanted to let you know that we use Kayak quite a lot. My husband is far more organised and uses it for all his work travel. And then I just follow him so I can access all his flight details and when he's coming and going. And then for personal travel, we use the same thing so that we can both access it. So it is great. And then very simply for all our other planning, we keep our own calendars, but just invite each other to anything that's relevant. So any of the kids stuff that he needs to know about, I just invite him to. And likewise, if there's anything on for him that I need to know about, he sends an invite to me. So we manage our own, but we've got access to everything. So very simple, but seems to work for us. Anyway, still loving listening to the podcast. I've been listening from the beginning. I'm actually Sarah's one of the original Fat Expat's cousins. So it's lovely to still be listening. Okay, keep up the good work. Bye.
Oh, I love that message. I love that message. Hi, Victoria. How are you? Deeply jealous that you're in New York, you lucky bugger. Kayak sounds good, and I'm going to go and look it up. I also think that I have to force my husband to do the Google Calendar thing. I use the Google Calendar for work, but he's not a Google Calendar guy because he's doing all his other calendars in his own calendar world. So I need to get him to join mine. There was something in the Facebook group as well, wasn't there?
There was. So in the Facebook group, there was a much discussion. So someone, Maretta, I think, said, I've just listened to the podcast and I have to tell you, we use TripIt. And then everyone just jumped on the TripIt bandwagon and said, yes, yes, I was going to say the same thing. So Katie said, I've definitely mentioned TripIt before. So sorry, Katie, that we didn't think about that before last week. She said, we've been using it for 8 years now. The itineraries are great and you can share them with family. I use it when I'm applying for visas and have to remember where we've traveled, or when someone asks me to recommend a hotel somewhere where we've stayed. So that is a good tip. It can be a bit of a pain when you have multiple overlapping trips, as it tends to bundle them all together, but you can go online and separate them. And Angela chimed in and said, set up an option in TripIt to automatically forward any travel details from nominated email addresses directly to TripIt. So there's no need for manual forward and captures. So there was a lot of people in the group saying TripIt. So I have downloaded TripIt and it's ready to go for my next trip. But I haven't put anything in yet.
Well, that's a very, very good expat tech trip.
Trip.
So trip it. Okay, doing it. So speaking of expat tech, Melissa was very cool with expat tech this week. She also managed to find the microphone button on the Two Fat Expats website. Nikki, do you know how Melissa found the microphone on the Two Fat Expats website?
Well, I think what she did, Kirsty, was go to www.twofatexpats.com and right there in front of you, the microphone is on the right-hand side of the page. You just click it and start speaking. Speak to us.
Okay, let's listen to Melissa's message now.
Loved your latest podcast. I think you're right, Kirsty. It depends how long between moves. We'd been in our last country 15 years and then we've done our latest expat move, which is, you know, the latest in 27 years of traveling as an expat. And oh, I sucked at it. I just sucked at that first 3 weeks, and I 3 months actually, to be really honest, and I really didn't think I would. I'm still sucking at it and wondering how I can be so bad at it after all these years. But I think you're right, you know, you're braver when you're younger and you just don't think about all the things that could go wrong. And now I'm grinding my teeth in my sleep because I'm, you know, still waiting on passes and things like that. So thank you, it made me feel a lot better. It's Melissa.
Oh, Melissa. I'm glad it made you feel better, because hearing you made me feel better as well, that I wasn't being a wimp. But, yes, it's that. She's absolutely bang on. It's the waiting to get the right pass to go in and out of the country. It's been, you know, because I remember when you move here to Qatar, there's about, you know, 3 or 4 months where you pretty much can't do anything because you're waiting for the for all the admin to fall into place. You know, you need, first of all, you need to get your RP card. And if you don't have an RP card, you can't do anything. So you're going through all the rigmarole of the blood tests and the visits and the medicals and the admin of getting that. And then you're trying to get your license organized. And then, you know, the most important thing, you need to get your booze pass to be able to buy alcohol from the shop. And you can't do that without the special letter that says how much money you earn, and that's how much, you know, you can spend on your booze. All this stuff. But it's
in Germany, you have to register at an address before you can do anything. Anything.
Yes.
You don't have your annual, but you can't do anything.
And it's all that stuff, right? And I've done that over and over and over again. I've got through, you know, all of that stuff and had, you know, small children in the process and been able to get people at school and buy cars and get the internet put on and you know, do all of those things. But now I just go, oh, I think about when I land in Doha now, I look like I belong here and I live here. You know, I know exactly how to get off, how to get on, which lane to go through. I've got my special pass that gets me through with all the other residents. I hop in a car, I know exactly where to go. Do you know, there isn't that sort of trepidation that comes with an expat, because for those first, that first year when you're new somewhere, you know, there is that trepidation of, oh, shit, I'm lost again. Oh, God, I didn't know I needed that form. You know, oh, what? What do you mean I have to, you know, walk backwards and turn left to get here? Do you know, all that stuff. So, yes, thank you, Melissa. Loved your message. And I would love to hear from anyone else who is sucking at moving or feeling geographically challenged as well. Expat relationships. Nikki, have you got anything to talk about relationships? Mine at the moment is my husband is currently in Southeast Asia while I'm here, and he's sort of flying all over the place from one country to another, and he actually flies in tomorrow night at about 11 o'clock, which would be great, except I fly out tomorrow night at about 9 o'clock. So that's what's happening in our life at the moment with our expat relationship. And, of course, while I'm about to, once I get off this call with you, I'm about to go down and reheat yesterday's leftovers for my boys, whereas I have as we're speaking, just got a message from my husband saying, back at the hotel, dinner was good. We went to Wolfgang Puck's steak place.
Nice, nice. So I would ask you this, Kirsty, for those 2 hours when you're both out of the country, what expat logistics do you have and documentation do you have in place for the guardianship of your children?
Yes. Yes, definitely, right? So we're very lucky. We've had some very good friends here for a long, long, long time. So they are informed and about and aware and they're around. So they're here to sort of cover that. We do have the emergency list on the fridge, which tells everybody what needs to happen first and who gets the first phone call. Actually, that is a really good thing that we need to sort of have on the site, isn't it, Nikki? We should sort of upload that sort of information for people because it is really important to have those details in a country such as Qatar, because while it's only like a little tiny window, and I do feel that my children are completely safe and we've got great neighbours and great people and, you know, we're in a secure compound and all the rest of it, you know, it is a window where you go, oh, what if something terrible did happen? And so what we would do is the phone call would go straight to the friends who would come here and take this is a terrible thing to even talk about. I think maybe I'll talk about it on a day where I'm not about to fly out of the country.
But what I was trying to do was being responsible and talk about you, because we've talked about it before and you've had podcasts about it. Like, just what you have to have set up. That's all. It's just, it's an administrative detail. Yes. I don't want to sort of dwell
absolutely
on that.
Absolutely. No. Okay, so Nikki, expat money. I sat down with my husband, G, as we've talked about in the past, and I recorded our conversation. Now, I did that for two reasons. I wanted to record it so we could use it today because I really think I would like to talk more about expat money. And, you know, it seems to be a topic that is, you know, that we're all interested in. And I think expat money, once again, when you put the word expat in front of something, it suddenly becomes different. Expat money and expat budgets are different than everyday. So I wanted to talk about it. I wanted to record it so that we could use it for the podcast. But also I wanted to record it because the conversations I have had in the past with my husband about money have been terrible. And they've been terrible because we get this tone. We both get it. We both have our reasons for why we have history, and I talk about it. But rather than play the entire interview, we've decided to turn it into a bit of a bonus episode. So we'll be talking this week about how we came to the conclusions of which accounts to have, but we'll also talk about budgets. We'll talk about the best expat accounts, the best expat investments, the best expat insurance. We'll talk about all of that stuff. But this week was really the start of talking about expat money. And Nikki, I will share it all with you, but I'll just give you a couple of minutes of one of my little light bulb moments I had. I've had vegetable soup for dinner. But you did offer a date night. You did offer a date night,
I even tried to set one up last week and then you knocked me back. You're too tired.
I was too tired. It seemed like too much effort, didn't it?
Yeah. They're going to take you to a Japanese restaurant.
Okay.
Well, why don't you start and I'll fill in the gaps.
Okay. So I would say that at the moment, what it looks like at our house is that you have full control over the banking.
No, I'd say that you choose to not participate.
Oh, yeah. No, but I'm saying at the moment how it looks is you have... I'm not judging you for that.
Yes, it's just the word control implies I've taken something and I'm not providing access to money into the accounts.
So
that's wrong.
So you're worried... Are you worried about that? That's how someone might see it? That because you do all the money that it would be seen? Oh, really? Mm. See, I never think of that. I just think of the fact that...
And that's how I think the kids see it too, particularly the boys.
Ah, interesting. Okay, the alarm's a little bit over the top, but I had to jump in here. That's how the kids see it? that I've maybe created that. I've written so much about expat women losing their identity or losing their power because they're giving up their careers. And here I was the whole time setting this terrible example for my children by not showing that I had a little bit of influence over the bank accounts. You know, of course, if they see that dad's quickly opening the laptop to make a transfer or that dad's talking about what he's had to do at the bank that week and mum seems completely disengaged, what sort of message have I sent them?
So first of all, your husband offers to take you on a date night and you're not interested. Now, we need to talk about that. But beyond that, it's a great start to a conversation. So I think it also paints Gene a very good light. He sounds like a perfectly reasonable human being. I don't know why you don't like talking about money with him.
Do you know, our money conversations, before I started recording them, were always terrible. And I go into that a bit more about the history because I think back to our history in our marriage. We've been married for 20 years. And so, you know, like all couples long-term, we've had ups and downs with money. You know, sometimes we've been flush with cash and other times things have seemed fairly drastic. So it was interesting to sort of cast our minds back and look at how we both deal with each other. And I think, you know, I've definitely distanced myself from our money situation because if you have a conversation that's awkward and uncomfortable, you avoid it. You know, you just stay away from it.
I also avoid money conversations in our house, but for a slightly different reason. So, but I get head up over them for similar but different reasons.
Ah, interesting. We will talk about that, Nikki, later. So, yeah, I think what I have realised, and I won't spoil it, I'll get everyone to have a listen to the bonus episode who's interested in talking about expat money, but it did make me realise how unfair I've been on G because he's a guy with an economics degree that deals in strategy and planning, that knows a lot about investing and reads a lot about that. That's sort of, you know, his caper, but it doesn't mean he wants to be landed with it. He doesn't want to make every decision about it. He actually feels it's quite a burden and he hates that it's him, you know, every payday that's siphoning off everything everywhere it needs to go and having to think about everything. I think it has been really insightful for me to realise what it's done to him. And while I know we're in a good space, what I have stopped doing is sort of doing the hands-on, you know, elbows deep in, I need to transfer this, we need to pay for that, you know, we need to do this, this needs to happen here. And I want to get back to that. I want to get that I know that we've got the best bank accounts and I know that we've investigated, you know, the best interest rates, the best investments, the best insurance, all that sort of thing. Because I don't think too that there's anyone in the expat world that is doing that independently. They're all either people that are getting a cut somehow. Yeah. And I think it would be great just to have someone independent who's not making any money out of it go and have a look. So the bonus episode will come out on Monday. We'll have a website that you can go to that we'll talk about in the bonus episode. And on that website, I'll keep all the information that I'm learning all along the way so anyone can go and have a look. And if you want to take the ride with me, if you're someone like me who wants to get back in control of their money or learn, or maybe you're already in control of it but you want to learn more, come join me at Don't Blow Your Dough.
Don't Blow Your Dough. Nice. I like it.
Location, location, location. Nikki, who'd you talk to this week? It was cities and countries that start with a letter C.
C is for Copenhagen this week. And I talked to Claire in Copenhagen. See how I did that with the C's? That was not deliberate.
Okay, I haven't heard this and I can't wait to have a listen now.
On a scale of 1 to 10, what rate your current level of in love with Copenhagen?
In love with Copenhagen. Today, I would say an 8. So yeah, we've had the most beautiful sunny day here, absolutely freezing cold, but beautiful sunny day. The problem, one of the things about living in Copenhagen is the winter weather. It just can be a blanket of grey cloud for weeks and weeks and weeks over the winter, and it's very, very dark, and that's quite hard at times, especially coming from the Middle East.
What's your best local find?
Bakery. Fabulous bakeries here, and there's one particularly which is just down the road from us, and it's wonderful. They make this fabulous spelt loaf, which is it's just the most amazing bread. It's lovely. But then, of course, there are bakeries all over Copenhagen, but that one is particularly good.
What drives you crazy?
Apart from the weather in the winter, I think not being able to go into a shop and have someone speak to me in Danish. They always know that I'm not Danish, and they'll speak to me in English. So it doesn't matter how hard you try to speak the language. They'll foil you. They know that you're not Danish.
Where's somewhere, not where you are, just anywhere in the world that you never want to go back to?
I never want to go back to. Goodness, that is a good question. Oh my goodness, I don't want to. I nearly said Texas, but the husband in the oil industry, that might be a bad thing. I might jinx myself. I don't think there is anywhere that I wouldn't go back to. Is that being difficult?
Not at all. No, it's totally your choice.
No, there isn't anywhere I wouldn't go back to. I haven't gone anywhere that I've loathed so much that I couldn't return, even if it was just for a visit, a quick flying visit. Because I think most of the places that I've visited, unless it's been on a holiday, I've got friends there that I would like to see again, probably.
That's a good answer. What's the best piece of advice you've been given about your expat life?
Surround yourself with positive people, I think, because this expat life can be a bit of a roller coaster emotionally. We all know that you know, you have the 6 months honeymoon, and then after that things can be challenging. So at that point you have to find some really good positive chums. Find yourself some good running mates or tennis mates or lunch friends or something like that. Find those people that suit you and keep you buoyed up.
What's the biggest lesson you've learned living this kind of lifestyle?
I think is trying not to second guess anything and live in this moment. I think when you live like this, you're often thinking about the next move, and you know yourself, if your partner or your company has taken over, you start to worry about what's going to happen next. You know, where's the next job going to be? Are you going to still have a job? And that makes things very unsettling. And I think the best thing to do is just not think about it too much and just live for the moment and enjoy what you're doing while you're doing it.
Brilliant. Yes, live for the moment, enjoy it for the moment. Don't be worrying yourself too much. You just can't. But I also love the surround yourself with positive people.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think that's pretty consistent message is the people around you are very important, that we're getting from a lot of the people that we're talking to. One other thing, which is a bit of a coincidence, is that this is Claire's second trip to Copenhagen. So she was there for some years and then went to Qatar and then returned to Copenhagen as a posting. So it's her second time there. So it's I loved talking to her again for ages and ages, and I had to snip it down to that quick few minutes.
I think it's interesting, Nikki, that question of is there anywhere you'd never go back to. I think all three interviews now haven't been able to say anywhere. I wonder if we just remove it, because is it that expats will always give a location another try? They'll always give somewhere the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I probably should take that out next time. That's a good point. And also I thought Claire's response was particularly good in that she said, well, even if it's a bad place, there's probably someone there that I like, so I'd like to go back and see them.
<laughs> Okay, very quickly, because we've been on for a while, but books, movies, telly, podcasts, what have you been doing, Nikki?
Well, now, before we start on this, Kirsty, I know we've been going on for a while, but who doesn't love another listener message? And so I am going to play you. So Angie in Dubai is sent us a message, and she has answered a question that we asked each other on the podcast a few weeks ago, which was who plays the German Meryl Streep or Brad Pitt? Is it always the same person? And Angie has the answer.
Hi, Nikki. Hi, Kirsty. I'm in a bookshop in Dubai Mall. I just thought I'd tell Nikki that it's the same actor who speaks the voice for Brad Pitt or any actor. It's always the same actor who has the voice for Brad Pitt until he dies. Okay. Bye, girls. Love your podcast. See ya.
Oh, that's fabulous. Now that we don't have the barking beagle, by the way, we can all listen to the mosque in the background. It's good that we're following my afternoon and the call to prayer. Angie's message was great also because she did it while she was standing in a mall. So Angie's obviously got it on her phone and done it. So, Angie, you win first prize for expat tech and expat advice all in the one thing, and you answered our question. That's very, very interesting. Okay, Nikki, there was also a message from Beck in Abu Dhabi, and she wanted to talk about the Conversations podcast as well. Do you want to have a quick listen to that?
Hi, Nikki and Kirsty. It's Beck in Abu Dhabi. And loving having you back on your podcast. I must admit to being a little unsure about the new format, but it is absolutely growing on me and I'm really enjoying it. Just to jump on the Conversations podcast bandwagon, as recommended by you both, I've been listening and came across an absolute cracker of an Australian by the name of Jan Becker. I think it's called The Mission of a Flying Midwife, an expat kid who went to boarding school, became an expat herself, reinvented herself and her career along the way, and is now helping deliver babies in Tanzania. The great listen. Thanks, guys, and keep it up. Bye.
Thank you so much, Beck, and thank you for the comment about the new format. I'd like to hear from others on that one too, because we're now in, what are we, week three, week four of the new format. And
time flies.
Oh, my gosh, isn't it? Oh, it does. So I'd really like to hear how people are coping with the new format. If you think it's working, if you think it's not, tell us. Do we suck? Do we not? You can also leave a review on iTunes. You can rate us and leave a review. But shoot us a message by going to twofatexpats.com and you will see a little microphone on our website. Leave us a message and tell us, what do you think of the new format? All right, Nikki, tell me, what are you reading? What are you watching? What are you listening to?
Well, before tomorrow night, I have to listen to read a book, Sing Unburied Sing, before my new book group, who still talks about books quite seriously. So I'm on a speed reading course, and Kirsty, I'm the shame. I'm listening to it at 1.4 speed to get through it. So next week I'll be able to tell you all about it and about my lovely book group. What about your book group, Kirsty? This time last week we were talking and you were about to go to book group.
Oh, wow, I was too, yeah. So we read I Am Malala, which is, of course, the story of the young Pakistani girl who was shot on the bus by the Taliban and airlifted to the UK, and it was her story. Okay, I could talk about the book and I could talk about book group. Yes, I do want to hear all about your Sing Unburied Sing, and I want you to tell me all about the actual book next week so that our listeners can hear what the book is about. First of all, our book group. So our book group is actually a Two Fat Expats Diehard book group. It started because I was insanely jealous of a friend's book group and I wanted a book group, and I put a little note on the Two Fat Expats Facebook page. I might have even put something on the Four Kids, 20 Suitcases and a Beagle page as well. But I asked if there was anyone else and had this amazing array of women, and we kind of worked on a first in best dressed and off we went. And our first book group was at my place, and We had oodles of food. People probably were maybe a little bit on their best behaviour. It was a little bit stilted. You know, people had a glass of wine or two or whatever. It was still good fun, but I think, you know, everyone was feeling their way. And then I was away for the second book group, and you know, Nikki, we had those rules. If you miss two, you're out. Yeah, we had very strict rules. And so I was away for the second one, and so for this one, I walked into the room and truly there was that much chatter and warmth, and everyone had a glass of wine in their hand and everyone was chatting away. You kind of had to find a place to put your bum on, and everyone was firmly entrenched and comfortable. And I have to admit, I spent the first sort of 10 minutes just looking around the room at all these different women, and they are all different women. I think there were probably on that, you know, from that first night, there were probably only two couples that came that knew each other. Everybody else came on their own and, you know, kind of stepped into this. Yeah. And so to watch all these different women who didn't know each other, all just giggling and talking and laughing and whatever, it was phenomenal. And they are a brilliant group of women, like just such a good mix. You know, we have, you know, from stay-at-home mums who had incredible careers before they sort of stopped to have babies and will go back into their careers, but really interesting women. And we have, you know, a doctor, and we've got a couple of lawyers, and we've got a bookkeeper, we've got a teacher, we've got a nurse, we've got a midwife. Do you know, we've got the full gamut of people to, which is great in a book group because they can give you their perspective from, you know, their work or their life or where they've come from, and you know, lots of different nationalities. And Nikki, I love my book group. I really, really like it. It's an excellent book group.
So I have to ask you, are you at risk of expulsion because you're going to be away for the next one?
Well, you can't miss two in a row, and no, I'm not going to be away for the next one. So I'm back here again for the next one and for the one after that. So I'm on track, and then we'll, of course, stop for the summer holidays because we'll all go home. Now back to the book on I Am Malala. I would say 90% of the people there really enjoyed the book, and we all talked about being guilty of not knowing her story. We had all thought that from news reports that she was a Pakistani girl who got shot in the head on a bus by the Taliban, and that, you know, that they obviously had an issue with girls going to school. But it wasn't. There was a whole story behind the story. Do you know, she had been singled out by the Taliban before then. I didn't realize her father actually owned the school that she went to. That she had written for the BBC and written about young women's rights in Pakistan. So there was much more to her story than what I had thought. It was well written, probably a little bit too much detail for me, but also very insightful. You must, when you're reading it, then go and Google the location she's talking about, because it gives you this great reminder that Pakistan is beautiful and green and there's big lakes, and you know, it is a place of absolute beauty, and perhaps not what we envisage for those of us who haven't lived there.
Yeah, and that, and we have done a podcast before where we talked, where people talked about their favorite places they've traveled, and Pakistan came up as one of them.
Yes,
before, if you remember that. But yes, so
yeah, I do remember that. Yes. Now, what are you watching on the telly?
On the telly, Kirsty, did you ever watch Glee? Were you a fan?
Wasn't a fan. Did watch it. I watched it with the girls, I think, for the first series.
Okay, well, good to know. I am watching a new TV show that started this. It's one of the fall shows, spring shows, whatever. It's called Rise, and I think it's kind of like the new version of Glee. So it's set in a high school, but it's a lot more gritty. So it's set in a high school. Everything's not airy fairy love and light. It's kind of hard going. The school, you know, funding issues. There's not a lot of money. This there's been the same theatre teacher forever and they've put on the same theatre production forever. And another teacher wants to take it over, so the principal lets them, and then it sort of goes from there, and he's trying to recruit all the wrong people. You know, all these people have had the starring roles before, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, there's only been one episode so far, but I think I'm going to be hooked, so because I'm a sucker for it. So,
and is it something you could watch with the kids?
Yes, I think it is. Yes, it's totally. It's on American Network Television. Totally something you could watch with the kids.
Okay, so I have just rolled the second season of The Good Place. Now, I know you've talked about The Good Place before, Nikki, and we talked about it has Kristen Bell and Ted Danson, and it's all about the idea of the afterlife and going to the good place, but there's a twist. So I started watching this in Australia because my sons had told me I had to watch it, and I just didn't dig it, but then was kind of made to watch it with them, right? You know, when it's that, oh, what are we going to watch? And three people jump up and down and say, The Good Place, The Good Place. And you're like, oh, yay. But I have to say, I loved the second series. It was fantastic. So, you know, in the second series, you're not quite sure where it's going to go or how they're going to make it happen.
Absolutely. After the first series, you think they've got nowhere to go, but yeah. Actually they do.
Yeah, so if people are wondering, so it's sort of the idea is that she gets to the good place and she knows that it can't be right that she's there because she was so naughty when she was on Earth, and she kind of works it out that, oh, hang on, there's a twist to this. I'm actually in the bad place. So, yeah, you can't work out, well, what are they going to do? Because, you know, how are they ever going to get out, or how are they going to hide it? It's a really great twist, and I really, really enjoyed it. I'm also making my way through this season of This Is Us, which just seems to make every episode.
I stopped watching it.
Oh, really? Because it was just so sad?
It was just so emotional. Like, it's not something you can watch just with
yes.
time. Like, you have to be on. You have to be in the frame of mind. And that's just not when I watch TV. I watch TV when I'm tired and I just want to, like, just when at night when I'm trying to go to sleep and stuff. And no, it was too emotional for me.
Yeah. Any new podcasts?
Podcasts, yes. Well, so I've got a question. So I know that we're always very worrying about when we're editing this podcast about the length of a podcast. So what is the length of a podcast that you're prepared to listen to, Kirsty? What do you think?
45 minutes to an hour. I'm on the treadmill for about 40 minutes and then about 20 minutes of weights. So I can quite happily, I wear my little Bluetooth headphone, so I'm more than happy to get on the treadmill and listen to it throughout. And then when I'm in the car and I'm zipping around, I'm in another car and doing things, I love short little snippets. I cannot stand long podcasts, and you and I have this conversation all the time, Nikki, because we tend to go over time, and I would love to just have it down to an hour and done. I would love to hear from our listeners about how long they would like a podcast to be. Please phone in and tell us, or put something on our Facebook page, our Facebook group. But yeah, I'd love to know. But why do you ask, Nikki?
Well, I ask because Dax Shepherd has a new podcast. Doesn't everyone have a new podcast these days, Kirsty? Everyone's jumping on the bandwagon. Dax Shepherd, of course, is from the TV show Parenthood and many, many other films and TV shows. And he's married to Kristen Bell, who is, in fact, the star of The Good Place that we've just talked about.
Yes. And Dax Shepherd rocks up in season two of The Good Place.
Yes, correct. So what I want to say is his podcasts are about the two-hour mark. So I saw that he had a podcast and I saw it was with Ellen DeGeneres. I thought, oh, I'd quite like to listen to Dax Shepherd talk to Ellen DeGeneres. And so I downloaded the podcast and it's called Armchair Expert. And so I downloaded and I looked at all the episodes and they're all 2 hours except the one with Ellen. It's 58 minutes, so Ellen knows what's going on. But so I thought I'd start, though, listening to the first episode, which is him interviewing or talking to Kristen Bell, who's his wife. And I haven't finished it yet, which is so weird because I listen to a lot of podcasts, as you know, all day. Everyone knows all day, every day. And I don't care how long they are but it's kind of, it's daunting that it's so long. So I turned it off. Obviously, I was making dinner or something, and then I turned it off And then I didn't turn it back on. When I went back in, I listened to another podcast before I listened to the rest of that. So I'm just not sure how I'm going to go. But if anyone else is listening to it, let me know, because I'm definitely going to be listening to the one with Ellen.
Just on that podcast though, Nikki, I had read someone else's critique of that particular podcast, and I haven't been there because there was a long conversation. I can't remember where I read it. Like, it must have been in a Facebook group where someone said, is anyone listening to Dax Shepherd's new podcast? And a whole stream of people said, who's the woman he's talking to in the background? Like, is it his producer? And what is that about? And does he ever introduce her? And how does that work? And I was thinking, oh, that sounds confusing. So supposedly he must have someone who's doing the editing or producing, or someone that's in another room who he refers to. And sometimes you hear her voice or you don't hear her voice, or she laughs or he laughs at something about her, but there's no real introduction of who that person is. Did you find that?
No, because she's not in the first episode. The only people in the first episode are Dax and Kristen. So far. I'm an hour in. So what can I tell you? The other one I'm listening to is feeding my political addiction, which is, of course, you loved Making Oprah. Now the same lady from Making Oprah has made a new series, Making Obama. And it's about Barack Obama from the very beginning of his career. So when he left university and started his first job, and it's not going to go up to the presidency. So it just goes through his early political life. So what jobs he had, how he decided to go back to Harvard and do a law degree, all that kind of stuff. So it's quite interesting because it's kind of the nitty gritty deep background. And it does have interviews with Obama, and it does have interviews with a lot of people from his early life, not his family and friends as such, but people that he interacted with when he first worked in Chicago. And it's a lot about the whole political life in Chicago, and I'm finding it really interesting. I don't know that you would necessarily love it as much, but I am definitely enjoying it, and I would give it a big tick for and thumbs up for anyone that isn't listening yet and that does enjoy a bit of US politics.
I think it'd be really interesting to hear Obama. I don't know if I've really heard that much of him since he stopped that gig where he was a president. But I think that would be interesting to hear, you know, the not so presidential, you know, Obama, to sort of have that conversation. I'll tell you one other podcast that I listened to when we're seeing now that we talked about Dax Shepherd and not making way through, is a lot of people were talking about Gwyneth Paltrow has a new Goop podcast.
Oh, really?
Because like you said, every man and his dog has a podcast now. And she had Oprah on as her first guest. And I had a really good friend suggest, you know, oh my gosh, you've got to go and listen to Oprah, you know, with Gwyneth. And I love Oprah.
I know.
I did the same with this podcast as you. I kind of listened to 10 to 15 minutes. I think I did, you know, walked home from the gym with it in my ears. Took it out of my ears and never really went back. And I don't know, it didn't sort of suck me in, but maybe I'll go back and finish it and come back and give it a fair critique next week. The other podcast that I think has been kind of handy for me is Radio National on the ABC. They have a little In Case You Missed It podcast. It's called ICYMI, as in how, you know, everyone abbreviates In Case You Missed It to that. And it's kind of a summary of all the really good stuff that they've had on Radio National that week. So it's like a little sort of squiz of everything, you know, compacted into one. And I really, really have enjoyed that because it's quite varied, because Radio National is such a great gutsy kind of, you know, station and content that you get some really good content out of it. Anything else, Nikki, that you want to throw in for this week before we go?
Well, just if we're going to stick to podcasts, I'll just do one more thing, and on Radio National. So I do also listen to the Radio National Drive show. So what most people, I'm sure, who listen to podcasts know is that most radio shows that they listen to in their home country or other countries they've lived in are also available usually in podcast form. So I listen on a fairly regular basis to the Radio National Morning Show and the Radio National Drive Time in the afternoon. and I just think it's good to know, because if you're thinking, oh, I really miss my favorite radio show or that radio personality, you can check and they've probably got a podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I've got to wonder what's happening to the people at Sonos, because we bought a Sonos system, I think probably when we first moved here. And, you know, that was just this amazing piece of technology because you could tap into all these different radio stations, right?
Yeah.
And we still have it. We still use it. And we listen to the radio live through our Sonos. But I think that's because my husband isn't a real smartphone app kind of guy. So, you know, I would get in the car and listen to that radio show that I wanted to listen to on a podcast. So I listen to so many football shows on different podcasts, but they're all people that have radio shows mostly. But, yeah, I wonder what sort of happened to that business with Sonos, because now you can do exactly like you've just said. You can either stream the radio right there and then wherever you are in the world, or you can catch it a bit later on a podcast if the timing doesn't suit you.
Perfect. That's right. Anything else, Kirstie? We've talked for a long time.
We have. I'm actually now sitting in the dark. The dog stopped barking, so I'm thinking it's possibly died of starvation, along with my children who are downstairs with it. So, Nikki, I really think it's time for me to go.
Okay. I agree. I have to go too. All right. Goodbye then.
Okay. Bye.